Well, welcome to St. Abraham's Day. Didn't know we had it. I'm glad we do. I think the best thing for us to do this morning... Oh, a couple of other things. We will try to leave as much time for questions as possible this morning. Those of us who are here and some more who will be coming will hang around as much as possible afterwards. If you do not get all of you, and there will be people available also tonight at the banquet then, so that you can talk to us. If you do not get all of your questions answered, or even if you do, you have the AAL pads in your packets, please be sure, write your question, your name, your address on it, and give it to me. All right? And we'll get to it in the next 3 months or so. Okay, but we'll try to get you an answer. We'll do our darndest to get you an answer and to get it as quickly as possible. All right, best thing then to do is probably to take right off. Professor Schmelder is the first speaker this morning. Professor Schmelder is the registrar here at Concordia Seminary, a professor of historical theology, and if you listen to him long enough, you believe that historical theology is the most important department here. He will be talking to us about the structure and the content of seminary education. Bill?
That's a demonstration that you are men of faith when you applaud before you hear what you're going to get. If one were in the theater, one would have to begin by saying, what a terrible act to follow. I have a fantastic respect for my colleague and former teacher, Dr. Horace Hummel, and I'm always so thoroughly filled when I listen to him preach. He can do more, as he did this morning, with one word out of the Old Testament than a lot of preachers do with 66 books of the Bible and 50 years of preaching. I'd like to begin with four basic, not propositions, but what kind of catchphrases that might give some content or frame of reference for the things I want to share with you this morning. First of all, as we look at theological education, I think we have to keep in mind that theological education and what we do here at a seminary is for men of faith and not for people who are looking for a faith. I would think in our office at least once a week, either Dave or I get a letter from somebody who has just become a Christian. They're all turned on by their new experience, and they say, we want to come to the seminary. And in a very kind way, we have to write them back and say, well, maybe you're not ready for seminary. A seminary is not kind of an extension of summer camp in an evangelistic sense. And I'm not running down any of those experiences. Summer camp, as long as I don't have to be involved in it. But, a seminary exists, and I think as Dr. Bowman made very plain in the media presentation you heard, as he will again this morning, this seminary in particular exists very consciously as an instrument of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, as a servant of the Synod, to prepare the Synod's candidates for the office of the Holy Ministry. Now, that puts a very restricted meaning on what a seminary does. One of the reasons why we have a declaration of intent form for every new student is that it is basic that a home congregation recognizes this person as a fit candidate for the office of the ministry. Now, because this is a place for men of faith, not men looking for a faith, there will be certain prerequisites and certain things we will look for in a candidate for the office of the ministry. The second phrase or proposition is that a theological seminary is not an ecclesiastical trade school. Now, I didn't originate that phrase. It comes from a much more gifted man than I. The three presenters before the president, we sometimes refer to ourselves in the last couple of years as a traveling road show. The three of us for 2 years served on the placement committee, which met every half hour, I think. We went around giving presentations. And one time, I think we were in Fort Wayne the night before one of our presentations, and the three of us just sat around and figured, the question we always ask one another is, what are we doing at a theological seminary? Because when we totaled it up, the three of us had 50 years of pastoral experience. We couldn't come anywhere near that in teaching theology, but on a seminary campus. So I mean, when I use that phrase in as almost a pejorative, that it is not an ecclesiastical trade school, I'm saying that out of a context of most of my professional life and the two speakers after me in the parish ministry. And I think frequently you hear often well-meaning pastors saying, well, you don't have to teach all that junk down there. You know, my department particularly, you know, most people think even all the way through the seminary they could get by without that. You know, and well, systematic theology, as long as you know your catechism and what you really, you know, exegesis, oh, no, don't let them get all wound up in that. Teach them how to make calls, how to chair a meeting, how to preach good sermons and teach confirmation class. And good grief, you ought to be able to do that in 2 quarters and get these men out in the church. And, you know, the whole structure of theological education seems like such a terrible burden to inflict on someone who only wants to serve God's people with the gospel. Well, a seminary is not an ecclesiastical trade school. And I think we have to keep that in mind. And also, the well-meaning pastor who says you don't have to teach all those courses, you must remember, is even talking out of a background that he took them all. And the phrase, I am a part of all that I have met, also applies to the man who says, I don't know if I needed it. And the third kind of frame for what we want to talk about this morning could come from a story relayed by Martin Niemöller. Martin Niemöller, you might recall, was one of the courageous pastors in Nazi Germany who was imprisoned and wasn't executed because the Allies got there before Hitler's order. And one time Niemöller heard someone say that, you know, you really didn't need all this education to be a pastor, because you could rely on the Holy Spirit. God will guide you. And Niemöller said, early in his ministry, an old pastor told him that it is true that one should rely on the Holy Spirit, but the only time the Holy Spirit ever spoke to him in the pulpit, he said, Heinrich, you're lazy. There was a book, I think, printed in the early part of the 17th century, Seasonable Thoughts on the State of Religion in New England. And one of the charges made in this book is that many people say they rely on the Holy Spirit as an excuse for their own sloth. Well, if you aspire to the office of the Holy Ministry, you are aspiring to an office where you never stop growing. Because when you do, as Dr. Herbert so eloquently put it yesterday, you know, you don't have much to offer anymore. You know, the well will soon run dry. So, you know, laziness in theological, intellectual matters is inexcusable, really, for one who would serve God. I've been reading through a homiletics book. I don't know if they can't decide which department I can teach in, if I can't teach in any, but after next quarter, exegesis is the only one I haven't dabbled in. But a book written, I'll leave it nameless, but by one of the leading homileticians in the United States in American Protestantism, and he makes the note on studying the text, only the very scholarly will consult the original languages. That was a library book, so I didn't throw it away or toss it against the wall. But, you know, if only the scholarly have the time to study the original languages, well, the people are going to be fed leftovers. And I don't know how you feel at home, but I have a rule against leftovers. My children eat them. One advantage of having 5 children, there are always enough around to eat the leftovers. You know. Those of you from Fort Wayne, you know, don't go to Burger Chef if you can get an invitation to Café Chanel. You know, why bother? But I think the fourth frame of reference that we need to keep in mind is that divisions into departments of theology are a relatively new thing. And let's be quite honest and speak the academic heresy that they may even be an unnecessary thing. We do not train people to be practical theologians at the expense of historical theologians or systematic theologians or exegetical theologians. We train people to be theologians. You know the old bon mot that if Luther were teaching on a theological faculty, he would probably be a professor of Old Testament exegesis. But can you imagine confining Luther to that? You know, take a look at even the American edition of his works. You'd have to throw a lot of stuff away that is out of his field. Now, granting, you know, that there is much complexity in each field, but the function of the seminary education is to train people to be effective ministers of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that means that they know the breadth and some of the depth of theology in all of its aspects. Now, with that much of a prolegomenous remarks, would you open the catalog, which is the third book of subscription on this campus? You know, you subscribe to the scriptures, the Lutheran confessions, and the catalog of the seminary. And sometimes the catalog of the seminary has more thrust to it than the other two, you know. But it is the contract, as you remember. All right. What do we expect of a man of faith coming to the seminary? What equipment should he have in order to study theology? About 2 months ago, we got a letter in our office from a man who said, you know, he knew that the Lord was calling him to be a pastor. He dropped out of school after the eighth grade, but he didn't think that would make any difference because he had the zeal to be a minister of the word. Well, he might have the zeal, but I think within 3 days he'd be lost because of the basic, you know, intellectual academic background which is necessary for the professional study of theology. On pages 20 and 21, you have somewhat of a spelling out of what we look for, at least academically, in a prospective student. College preparation, a baccalaureate degree. I haven't quite figured out why we say a baccalaureate degree with a cumulative of 2.0, because I haven't found an institution that's accredited that will give you a baccalaureate degree for under 2.0, so that may be an unnecessary redundancy. We do have a very select number of students who do not have a baccalaureate degree. The Association of Theological Schools allows a seminary to admit up to 10% of its students without the baccalaureate. We usually operate here with the rule of thumb that such a student must be at least 30 years of age and have at least 2 years of college and demonstrate by some test or series of tests that he does possess the academic background necessary for the study of theology. I'm sure you all are aware of the requirements in biblical languages, proficiency in Hebrew and in Greek, and I think as you have been assured by almost everybody around here, yes, you use them. Not only in your theological education, you know, you can't store your Kittle and Nestle on the day of graduation for, you know, putting on your shelf. We would hope they would be used as long as you serve actively as a pastor, and then when that blessed day comes, you can study it only for your own enrichment. But we think they are tools to be used not only to pass courses. You will need them to do that, too, I can assure you. And if you have any doubts about that, Dr. Hummel is still at the other end of the room, and he will doubly assure you, at least in Old Testament and the courses he teaches. Other foreign languages are of great benefit. They are not required for admission. They are more than highly desirable. And I think some of you who are early enough still in your college career that you can pick up a few languages. I think it's rather amazing we have students on our campus who came without German or Latin who realize their deficiencies, and either on their own or in some organized fashion, they're trying to learn it. Dr. Heckert, for example, last year taught a non-credit course in theological German because we had some students who didn't have any background and knew the value of it. So if you have the opportunity, either privately or in class, they are of almost inestimable value. You need a speech course or its equivalent. Quite obviously, since the public ministry of the word is the use of the human voice to a great extent, we want people who know how to communicate with some effectiveness. Somehow it would be distracting to me if I had to listen Sunday in and Sunday out. We want to correct some of those deficiencies if you have them. I mean, for your own good, and surely for the good of the people of God whom you hope and pray to serve. All right, then if you would turn to page 37, we can say a few words about the structure of the curriculum. And if at the end of this day you have some understanding of pages 37 and 38, if you catch me in the right mood, I might even waive a whole bunch of other requirements because you will know more than a lot of students on campus who have difficulty figuring out what these pages mean. All right. Theological education at Concordia Seminary is divided into four departments. Exegetical theology, the study of the biblical text and its meaning. Systematic theology, the orderly presentation of Christian doctrine. Historical theology, the way the church in its history has lived and worked and shaped its answers to theological questions, and practical theology, the application of theology to the lives of people. And as you move through the seminary, we try to keep somewhat of a balance so that at each phase you are involved in all four divisions, and in a progressive way. Our curriculum is built on laying a foundation in the first year. In the first year, there is almost no electivity. There are some area options, but by and large, the first year you lay the foundation. The second year is compromise of methodological approaches. You still have some required courses, and there are usually more area options, that is where you must take one course out of two, three, or four in an area that are offered. And then second year, you also take a few electives. The last year is almost all elective because we believe that a man, after a solid foundation in all divisions, after a vicarage, should know a few things about himself. Particularly, he should know his strengths and he should know his weaknesses. So he should be able to evaluate what he believes he needs in his fourth year to be the most effective pastor he can be. There are very few required courses in the fourth year. Now, we have people who get all off the track because of various and sundry situations. But it would be possible that of the 40 hours of your fourth year, there would only be 4 hours that would be required, and that is pastoral theology, since we believe that pastoral theology is predicated on some kind of vicarage experience as well as the theological background. But other than that, a man could so arrange his program that all of the courses in the fourth year would be of his choosing. All right, what are the foundational courses? Obviously, if you look at exegetical theology, all except the electives are foundational, and they are all predicated on proficiency in biblical Greek and Hebrew. The techniques, the two courses in introduction. I should underscore that in a theological seminary, we often use the same jargon used on an undergraduate baccalaureate level, but with, you know, a different lexicon. An introduction course is not a survey. That might save us 100 paragraphs in letters if you all understood that. Now people say, well, oh, I took a Old Testament introduction. I have been pleading that we go back to theological jargon
and maybe return to the old name for this, which is isagogics. And then we would not have a confusion between introduction and isagogics. It's a theological discipline. It's not a Bible survey where you look for content and a few other things. In systematic theology, the foundation courses are the theology of the Lutheran confessions. Now, again, maybe we ought to return to theological jargon and call it symbolics, because on a number of our campuses, I know at Fort Wayne, and I would believe Ann Arbor might have one, St. Paul, Minnesota might have one, there is a course offered, the Lutheran Confessions, which is normally a reading through of selected parts of the Book of Concord. On a seminary level, you might operate with the same material, but surely from a deeper theological point of view. I had a colloquy student 2 years ago when I taught Lutheran Confessions 1, who came to me as the registrar. I always have to keep changing hats. And he said, as registrar, won't you let me pass out of Lutheran Confessions? Because I went to one of the teachers' colleges, and I took a course in Lutheran Confessions, and I took a confessional vow when I was installed as a teacher, so I don't think I really need that course. I said, well, you sit in on the course for a while, and we'll see. Until the first test. I didn't write the test with him in mind. But after the first test, it was quite obvious to him, it was obvious to me before, but it was now obvious to him, that he did not have a theological background and understanding in the Lutheran Confessions. And surely we would do a pastor a disservice to put him out in the church, particularly in this day and age, if he did not understand the nature of confessional subscription and did not understand the theological content in some depth of his own confessional commitment. Then there are three courses in systematic theology, dogmatics, a course in religious bodies, which again would do better if it were called comparative symbolics, because what you do is compare the public doctrine, the confessional writings of other American church bodies with the Lutheran confessions, which are your norm. So it isn't a history of religious bodies in America, but a theological understanding of their basis for existence. And then, of course, in theological ethics, you will note that systematic theology is almost all required courses except for some free electives, and that perhaps needs some attention. Historical theology has traditionally gotten the short end of everybody's stick, and Concordia Seminary is no exception to that general inanity. You know, everyone has to get up here and recruit for their own courses. So, at present, we have two area options, one in the area of the Reformation and one in the area of American Christianity. And four electives all over the place. There is more electivity in that department, even if it has less claim on the student. In practical theology, you begin laying the foundation with the two courses, worship and homiletics. Which one do you take first? That will probably depend on the first letter of your last name. In other words, there is no logical or theological sequence to them. We merely divide the first-year class in half. In the fall quarter, half take homiletics and half take worship. And in the winter quarter, they switch, primarily because it's the approach to which we take to these courses, that they should be taught in rather small classes. In homiletics, we prefer not to have more than 20. Because homiletics, as you heard it this morning, is the art of sermon preparation and delivery. The practice of Christian education is
a foundation normally laid in the second year, along with, if you'll turn the page, such courses as Homiletics 2 and Training in Pastoral Relationships. I should say that those five courses are normally considered necessary before a vicarage, because without those five courses, a man is not really equipped to go out and assume an active role as a vicar in a congregation. There is an evangelism area option, a mission elective, one of approximately 14 courses which we offer in the area of missiology. Each student must take one. Obviously, the person who is interested in a career in some form of foreign or specialized ministry will avail himself of more electivity in missiology. The course P187 hopefully will be retitled. It is really a course in the polity, the government, the arrangement of our life together in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Then on the next page you have free electives from any department of 15 hours and a vicarage. Then perhaps if I could call your attention to the bottom of 38, this will help you make sense out of the courses as you look at them. A course numbered 90 to 99 is a pre-seminary course. If you were to come to Concordia Seminary without Biblical Hebrew, you would take EO 90 and EO 91. There is no seminary credit for the course. If you come with some Greek but with a deficiency, you might be asked to take EN 95, which is a Greek review. If you come without a speech credit, and after an evaluation by the man working in that area, it is deemed that you need one, you would take P-90. So two-digit courses are pre-seminary. Gargle that with something. Not mil. But the next level, 100 to 299. A 100 to 299 course is either a required course, 100, or a required area option. If a course has a 100 number, you take it. I mean, that's the simplest way of looking at it. If a course has a 200 number, you need to select one out of a number of possibilities. A course with a 300 designation is open to MDiv students, provided they meet the other prerequisites so listed, but it is not open to students in the School for Graduate Studies. A 400 level course is open to students in the MDiv, Master of Divinity curriculum, and students in the School for Graduate Studies. And again, there may be some special requirements, prerequisites, for the MDiv student. Much of this is taken care of by the nature of the curriculum. Most first-year students do not even have the option of a 400-level course. Again, the higher you get up in the numbers, usually the smaller the class. Many 400-level courses are taught on a seminar basis with a great deal of student input, as well as student reporting. The lower the number, it's, you know, you have greater input from the instructor with the students sponging it up. The 700 level courses would not concern you because they are open only to students in the Master of Arts in Religion program, which academically, although it's in the School for Graduate Studies, is the lowest degree that we confer. It is the first master's that we confer. It's based on approximately 48 hours of post-baccalaureate work where the baccalaureate was a major in religion, normally pursued by parochial school teachers or clergymen from other denominations who do not have the equivalent of a Master of Divinity. Those courses are
taught with less expectation on the part of the student. And 800 level courses would not concern you for at least 4 more years, because they are open only to students in the School for Graduate Studies, Master of Sacred Theology, and Doctor of Theology. All right, that may provide enough of an introduction to the structure. Let me say, because I've heard a couple of questions yesterday afternoon and this morning, students are admitted to Concordia Seminary at any quarter, and it is possible to be a student for 4 quarters a year. And I think increasingly our student body will move in the direction of going to school year-round. I think it's inevitable with more and more of our students married. They do not go home. Home is here. And they can accelerate a program by also attending the summer sessions and earning the equivalent of 1 quarter of work. Now, we do have a few problems with students who enter throughout the year, in that we may have to construct a program for them because of language deficiencies or because they do not have the requirements of the department that were offered in the fall quarter in order to take a course that's offered in winter or spring. But it is no problem. We have students entering 4 times during the year, and the seminary is geared up to receive a student at any time. Although, granted, the bulk of our students do begin with the fall quarter.
Why don't we take about, we're running late. Can we take about 5 minutes for questions now, and then we'll just lump everybody together at the end? And maybe that'll take care of some of them.
Yeah, a question about a course taken in undergraduate level. I understood that it's operated at the university. I was wondering if there would be any possibility of, I realize you said that it would probably not be placing out of, but to accelerate into a program as that major in theology, and would there be a chance of taking courses that would be maybe more stimulating as opposed to, or taking another additional course or something like that, how that would work. Also, I'd appreciate if you could comment on possibilities of enrolling cross-enrollment at another university or another theology school in the area.
All right, let me take the first one. It would, to a certain extent, depend on the nature of the course and an evaluation of the particular course whether you would be allowed to substitute another course for it. We do not have any method in theological education, of which I'm aware, to give advanced placement credit, as most of you are familiar with that from a baccalaureate level. There is nothing comparable to a CLEP program for theological education. I think the second, also there is an academic rule that a course on a baccalaureate level may not be transferred into a professional graduate level.
Will offer graduate courses if after you've completed your major program, you have time left in school, they allow you to take graduate courses. Would that say?
If it is a graduate course from something other than a theological seminary, an accredited theological seminary, an individual evaluation is made normally of the course description in the catalog, sometimes of the prospectus. And if there is, by content, and the way we do this is that I consult with the Dean of Academic Affairs and the department chairman who is concerned, so that it is not, you know, an individual decision willy-nilly made, but one that is academically respectable and defensible. But then the student still needs 136 hours for the degree, so he would have to take another course in the area. But we would make on a graduate level, yes. If it is from a theological seminary, an accredited theological seminary, then the procedure is much simpler. It must then correspond to a course in our curriculum. The second question. It is possible, I would think, you know, to be a part-time student. But as I look at a theological education and a program of it, it would seem to me that
to be taking another degree program at some other institution divides the student, and I would think says something about the place of his major residence. I know what a number of other academicians think of it. I know many places where they don't even discuss it as a possibility. If you are a full-time student in Institution A, you do not enroll in Institution B, except maybe during summer. Because if you have time on your hand, then you should be enriching your professional program. Studying at two theological seminaries concurrently, I do not personally think is advisable. I think it's inadvisable in the St. Louis area, because every other theological seminary in the St. Louis area is on a semester system. We're on a quarter system. You have a problem of dovetailing courses. And I think that theological education is more than accumulating courses. And there are other dimensions which Professor Warnick will talk about in terms of field education, and that Dean Hoffman will talk about in terms of community life in attitudinal development, that seem to me sometimes far more important than that a student passes a course. And I think there's a sense of community. From the standpoint of the catalog, it is not forbidden. So I can give you an official answer and a personal opinion. Here.
Is it possible to perhaps transfer to here after you've taken 2 years at another theological seminary?
All right. In transferring from another institution, we operate more with more than mere quantitative, although we do have a quantitative dimension to it as well. We have recently adopted a new policy on credit transfer. Our present catalog states that up to 1 year of credit from an accredited seminary may be transferred. And I think in catalogese, most of you should have become rather adept at catalogese by now. May does not mean must or can. You know, there are judgmental factors involved. You know, whether the course fits into the curriculum. What our present catalog policy says that is that each student will be evaluated on an individual basis. Normally, ordinarily, those are also catalogese, a student is expected to spend 2 quarters on this campus before a vicarage and 3 quarters after his vicarage. So that ordinarily, granting there might be the 1 in a million exception, ordinarily this institution provides better than 50% of the academic training for the student. But it is possible. Again, the courses must fit into the curriculum of the seminary, and you transfer in courses, not hours. And some of you have floated between baccalaureate institutions, and you know what can happen. It happens on seminaries, too. If you take, for example, a 3-semester-hour course, it is worth 4.5 quarter hours. If the course in our curriculum is a 3-quarter hour course, the most you can receive is 3/4 quarter hours of credit. You know, and I think one ought to take all those into consideration. There's one back there.
One more.
Okay. You're running the show.
In the section on systematic theology, which of the courses there that are required are considered basic dogmatics courses? Is it Lutheran Confessions, or which ones are the basic dogmatics?
Basic dogmatic ones are systematics 1, 2, and 3. Systematics 1 dealing primarily with prolegomena, epistemology, and theology proper, the doctrine of God, and anthropology. Systematics 2 with Christology, and systematics 3 with pneumatology, doctrine of the Holy Spirit, church, sacraments, etc., eschatology.
I really hate to cut it off, but I think we ought to be going. These guys will be around, you know, and you can cluster around them afterwards. And we'll try to open up the floor later on, too. I think we should move right on and ask Professor Warnick
if he would now discuss with us the field education and vicarage program here at Concordia Seminary. Professor Warning.
Thank you, Dave. Now, I feel like clapping, too, because when I left St. Louis early this past week, it was something like 0 or 5 below. And getting back last night and this morning, it's up around, what, is it 20 this morning? It feels like a warm day. And when we left St. Louis, the plane stopped at Phoenix, and as we approached the Sun City, the pilot radioed into the cabin and announced the temperature in Phoenix, and it was 76 degrees. And there was spontaneous applause on the plane because that flight had originated in Dayton. Anybody from Dayton, where they've had some of the real hard winter and low temperatures since early January? Well, I'm not clapping too hard, but then again I am, because on Monday I'm going out to L.A. for a week, and they tell us in San Francisco that L.A. is the warmest part of California and the warmest part of the country this time of the year. No competition from Florida this week. We're going to be in Los Angeles and at Christ College, Irvine. Is there anyone here today that might happen to be from the new college, the new campus in Irvine? Didn't make it, I guess. It's a little far. But we're going to be meeting with the supervisors, the pastors in our vicarage program. We're holding for our supervisors of the St. Louis Seminary conferences dealing with the whole matter of educating students in the vicarage, because we view the vicarage as a program of education. The vicarage is preceded by field education, which is a residence practical program here in the St. Louis community. Let's talk about field education first. Field education is where theological education gets to be fun. And because students begin, they get their feet wet in the actual disciplines of the pastoral ministry. Now, what does a pastor do? Now, what do you intend to be doing from day to day in the pastorate upon completion of your education and receiving your call? Well, a pastor is concerned with the worship of the church and with preaching. And one of the strong emphases in our field education program is to find opportunities in the churches of Metropolitan St. Louis for you students to begin conducting the liturgy and leading the church in worship and to begin preaching. Now, preaching is perhaps the most exciting aspect of the parish ministry. There's a lot to be said for one-on-one ministry, person-to-person, counseling, and the like. But the privilege of proclaiming the Word of God from the pulpit is one that should excite every man who is in college and who anticipates studying theology. Because really, our entire theological education, now all of our education, comes to a fine focal point there in the pulpit. For a man to arise to the occasion of preparing and delivering sermons Sunday to Sunday, year in and year out, as Professor Schmelder indicated, is no boy's task. This is a calling for men, men of God, and men who have tuned and steeled their intellects academically. And we want to emphasize that while field education is the practical, the fun part of theological education, it is fun and it is satisfying only if we bring to our tasks those things that Professor Schmelder was talking about.